Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mike Larson. He writes the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Mike posts quite regularly on Twitter and shares a lot of information that is worthwhile to keep up to date with him here. But Mike, let's start off, quick comment on the short squeezes that we have been experiencing over the last really 2 weeks now. These short squeezes seem to last about 4 days from trough to trough, I guess I could say, because that peak only lasts a couple days in there and then they seem to fall back down. Do these short squeezes or this market dynamic remind you of anything in the past that maybe traders should be aware of or cautious about?
Yeah, sure. I'm glad you brought that up because obviously the last several days, you know, back half of January certainly has been interesting. We've had this cabal, if you will, of online investors getting together on the Reddit forum and just saying, you know, okay, let's gang up on X, then let's gang up on Y, and then Z, and so on. So you've seen some unbelievable moves in some of the underlying stocks they were targeting, GameStop, for example, and BlackBerry and Nokia. It's like a 1990s time warp or something. Going back to all these stars of yesteryear, I mean, I can still hear that Nokia incoming call phone chirp rattling around in my head from back in the 90s. And, you know, now all of a sudden these stocks are getting squeezed. But as you mentioned, the squeezes haven't lasted long. You know, you're talking about a 96-hour or so cycle of running up extraordinary squeezes and then, you know, kind of falling right back to where they were before it happened. You know, and I think the echoes of the dot-com mania, again, late 1990s, I think it's only appropriate that you have names like Nokia and BlackBerry participating in this because, you know, that's the kind of the behavior that we saw back then where investors would share stock, you know, hot stock tips on the Raging Bull and Yahoo Finance message boards. And now the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's not Raging Bull or Yahoo Finance, it's Reddit. So, but, you know, the tactics, the swapping of tips, the chasing hot stocks, all that kind of stuff, and hot money flowing in and out of names very quickly and creating these huge magnitude moves. It's very much like what we saw back then. Obviously, as we all know, the action shifted to the silver market temporarily, and you know, it was sort of, all right, let's gang up on the shorts in the silver market and see if we can squeeze them too. But I mean, I'm sure as your listeners and you know, there's a lot of different dynamics in a larger commodities market like silver or gold or anything like that, relative or vis-a-vis some of these small, you know, easily squeezed, heavily shorted stocks. So you got a smaller rise in silver out of this, and it was reversed pretty quickly. But also, so you can say, oh, darn, you know, silver didn't go up 900% or whatever like GameStop did. I didn't get my chance to sell. But at the same time, it also didn't crash, you know, all the way back to where it did and lose $400 in a blink of an eye like GameStop did. And is kind of right back to where it was before the squeeze happened. And that's because there's underlying value in some of these other markets. I mean, silver has all kinds of other things going for it. Gold, too, of course, and they've been in bull market since late 2018. So, you know, you're not going back to just, you know, being stuck with a nearly bankrupt or troubled, you know, video game retailer that sells through the mall or, you know, a nearly bankrupt you know, movie company like AMC that, you know, the underlying business stinks and it just managed to get, you know, squeezed through this process anyway, temporarily, you're ending up holding an asset that actually has real longer-term value. So, you know, it's a crazy market environment. It just goes to show that some of the volatility and the weirdness that we saw in 2020 hasn't gone away just because the calendar has flipped. It's just sort of morphing into something else. And long story short, I think, again, when you get through all this, you still, as a precious metals investor, say, you know, I still have a lot of reasons to buy silver or gold. You know, sure, silver only briefly touched $30.20, whatever the short-term peak was there. The longer term, it's still in that bull market mode, so you want to hold on for more.
Yeah, that argument about the difference between what silver was going through before the short squeeze and what these other stocks like GameStop and Nokia were going through, they were in a bear market or they were being shorted for a reason. Silver, though, was heading higher before that short squeeze. So that is the one big difference that I agree with you there. But Mike, is this telling you something about bigger issues within the market now that these retail traders have shown that they can, in at least a short-term sense, push around some of these hedge funds? And we even started to see some of the funds jump on the back of this high volatility trade on the upside and on the downside.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you and I have talked for some time that we're in sort of this bullish overall market environment for assets, including stocks in general. And so it's been an environment where it's paid to be long and to find good quality names that are going to go up as the general tide lifts all boats. But when you transition from sort of that bull market behavior to euphoria, that's when you really start having problems. You know, sentiment is getting pretty extreme on the bullish side. Obviously, you know, in a normal market environment where there is not excess liquidity, there is not excess optimism or euphoria or whatever, you're not going to send a cratering video game retailer stock from $20 to $500. That just doesn't happen. But, you know, when you combine excess liquidity, euphoric sentiment, a Federal Reserve that doesn't know when to quit, and an economy that's, you know, getting back to some semblance or attempting to get back to some semblance of normalcy after this pandemic, the worst of pandemic news last year, it's a little bit more dangerous. I mean, as an investor, you have to realize that this kind of stuff happens in latter stages of advances, not early stages. So, I've been paring a little bit back here. I've been kind of, you know, saying, all right, you got to keep an eye on the exits here after riding this for quite some time, because when you get a bunch of guys and girls together in an online chat room and they try and, you know, put the shorts out of business, that's not really normal marketing behavior. That's kind of what you see at the end of manic advances. So you definitely do have to be more careful.
Okay. Yeah, just a word of caution. But boy, oh boy, it did offer some pretty good profit-taking events for some of these people that were stuck in some bad stocks, and even for some of these precious metal stocks that got a bounce on the back end of it. Let's take a step back now, Mike, and talk about the bond market, because it's one thing I'm watching closely is yields, especially on the long end, are continuing to rise. Kind of the same story that we were talking about a month ago, beginning of January, the 10-year started making its run above 1%, reached a peak of a little over 1.1%, and right now we're closing in on that level. The 10-year is currently at 1.12%. What's this telling you about the markets here? It seems like investors aren't too cautious still.
Sure. I think what you're seeing, I mean, you're seeing a combination of a number of things, one of which is just the economy digging its way out of the worst of the COVID downturn. I mean, we're certainly not firing on all cylinders, but some of the vaccination news, some of the reopening news, some of those kinds of things are helping out with the economic trend overall. So that'd be a first part of it. The second part of it is simply the enormous amount of money flooding out of Washington and the expectation of even more in the months ahead. I mean, the Biden administration is talking about or has already floated a $1.9 trillion aid package just a few weeks after $900 billion was thrown at the economy, and just a few months after another trillion plus was thrown at the economy and the deaths in the COVID crisis. So, the bond market is pricing in the impact that's going to have on growth, as well as the fact that it's going to have to be all debt funded or largely debt funded by enormous amounts of issuance. And then third, I just think you have an optimistic overall sort of opinion on risk by the market in general. And so you're seeing some selling of bonds as that money rotates out of bonds and into stocks and to some degree precious metals as well. All those factors are in play. I think unlike the cycle we had last time when interest rates really went nuts to the upside in 2013 as part of the taper tantrum, or even if you roll the clock all the way back to before the great financial crisis, when rates were really spiking along with the economy improving, you have a totally different dynamic now longer term. You have even more radical amounts of debt piled on top of the economy. You have demographics in terms of, you know, lowering birth rates and a generally aging population. That just increases demand for fixed income in general and for safe assets. You have structural issues, lower productivity, again, bigger debt loads on corporations, on governments, and so on. That means more, you know, income or more earnings and more revenue needs to be dedicated towards debt service, which means you have less to spend on other things. So all in all, those forces, you can call it by the simple term Japanification if you want, because that's what happened in that country's economy and has been happening in that country's economy for decades. So in the fact the Federal Reserve has no intention whatsoever of raising interest rates or rolling back QE anytime in the near or intermediate term future, you've got a recipe for interest rates that aren't going to probably violate my 3F rule, which is very simply that interest rates don't matter for stocks, broadly speaking, until they rise far enough, fast enough, and for long enough. And we're just not there yet. And I think unlike in 2013, the chance of that happening, next week, next month, next quarter, whatever, is probably pretty low.
So does that mean you're not on board with a lot of these bears that are saying these markets are going to pull back, potentially even crash in the near term?
You know, I think it's going to take some kind of catalyst, you know, some kind of thing spinning out of control. You would need a taper tantrum type event. You would need some kind of, you know, broader move that shows that this euphoria and what have you is causing systemic issues and so on, as opposed to just blowing up some reckless people who are too careless with their money. That being said, I mean, you know, it's not, am I as bullish and optimistic as I was 6 or 8 months ago? No, I'm not, because we're a lot higher since then. We also have some of these sort of yellow flags going up. So with that being the case, I mean, I don't think you want to be going crazy in terms of, you know, participating in this madness of crowds behavior that we're seeing. But I think you can still find good stocks, good sectors, good ETFs, good assets that, you know, are going to hold their value, that offer nice yields, that have higher Weiss ratings and things like that, that sort of allow them to be, you know, at the core of your portfolio and that you can still hang on to here. So, you know, my antenna's up, I guess I would say, some of these yellow flags, but I'm not seeing kind of the huge red flags that, you know, previously at big market tops really had you very concerned.
So, Mike, one other comment here is that you look at some of these other assets, especially commodities, that a lot of people are looking at as they were rising, especially the base metals, saying, look, this is showing that inflation is coming back. And we even were getting some inflation data that was showing that inflation expectations, at the very least, were picking up. The move in commodities has really slowed down. They're not crashing, but it seems like we're hearing less and less about this whole inflation, near-term inflation narrative. Where do you stand?
Sure. You know, longer-term inflation trend has been lower for the last couple of decades. I would call it a somewhat disinflationary environment that we're in. And it all goes back to the structural, demographic, you know, debt-fueled dynamic. The more debt you pile on top of the economy, the more sclerotic it gets, the more it's, you know, weighed down. It's like a 300-pound guy who eats a, you know, cheeseburger for every meal with a large fry and, you know, smokes two packs of cigarettes a day. He's not going to be running any marathons anytime soon, right? And that's unfortunately kind of what you have with the economy. The more of that sort of piling on that you do, that you load an economy up with debt, the lesser growth rates are going to be, the lower the long-term inflation pressures are going to be, and so on. So you can certainly get spurts where inflation picks up, but, you know, the Fed's been trying, and not just the Fed, but the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and so on, all of these central banks have been trying to create, you know, lasting, stronger inflation for what, decades now? And it hasn't worked. The trend's been lower, and it goes back to all those big picture forces. So, you know, it depends. I guess it depends on your time frame, 6-12 months versus the next 6-12 years, whatever. You know, that's why I say interest rates can go up, and they are. But, you know, if you try and push interest rates on a 10-year to 3-4%, which would have been seen as normal in, you know, a cycle or two ago, you know, when you have, what, $10 trillion more dollars worth of government debt, probably another $10 trillion worth of more of corporate debt on top of an economy, what the heck's going to happen to it if you send interest rates back to what levels they were at when you had $10 or $20 trillion less? The economy simply can't handle it. So long story short, the level at which interest rates will top out and roll over again is lower in each successive cycle. It has been since the early 80s, and nothing, in my opinion, is going to change with that, given the long-term forces that are at work. So, you know, I guess, like I said, you know, I'm not in a deflation camp, but I'm kind of in a gradual disinflation camp longer term, at least sort of my big picture view.
All right, let's wrap it up then, Mike, with any sectors or individual plays that you think provide that value and that long-term opportunity so that all these people that do want to invest longer than 2-3 days have that opportunity. Where are you seeing opportunities out there?
Sure. I mean, like, you know, like I've been saying for a couple of years now, I think the outlook for precious metals with all this money printing, with those underlying asset inflation, not real economy inflation, easy money, things like that, you know, weaker dollar and so on, all that still argues for higher gold, silver and mining share prices. So I think that's a great place to be. Any, you know, more defensive yielding type sectors where you're going to get better yields than you can in the treasury market or even in some, you know, corporate debt markets and so on. There's some companies in sectors like retail, infrastructure, even in a few select REIT and utility names that we have that I've liked in the Safe Money Report and continue to like. You know, there's places you pick and choose your spots, and those are all working. And I would say, if you look at some of the Biden administration's priorities and what they're going to spend money on, whether it's, you know, more legalization in terms of cannabis, whether it's things like clean energy. Those are also some niche type spots and infrastructure for that matter, where money, you know, federal money is probably going to be directed at those spending priorities. So that means the companies that are involved in those sectors should do very well. And that's definitely a place you want to focus.
All right, Mike, great chatting with you as always, buddy. I'll chat with you in another couple weeks, but I recommend everybody at least following you on Twitter and looking into your newsletter, that Safe Money Report, where they can get actual investments and where you are putting some of your money. Mike, great chatting with you. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Take care.